Morning, everyone. Imagine you are a storage administrator, Bob or Alice, in one of the large IT organizations of a company. And the CIO of your company has basically virtualized the whole data center of the company, running all the enterprise applications in virtual machines, which is a relatively smart move, some might say, because you might be doing all the cost savings while making your IT operations very nimble. But the CIO walks to Bob and says, Bob, I want you to make sure that all the storage requirements of the virtual machines are actually met, and whenever there is contention for storage resources, the critical workloads are not impacted. And for CPU and memory, we are relying on the virtualization layer to give us that solution, but I want you to do it for storage. Now, if you think about it, Bob has few options in front of him. One, he can always go and buy a lot more storage and over-provision so much that he doesn't have to deal with storage problems, which turns out to be very expensive, even more expensive than over-provisioning CPU or memory. Second option is Bob can go to a storage vendor and ask him to provide some quality of service for virtual machines and try to use those controls. And third option is he can look up to the virtualization software layer and say, can you provide us some quality of service controls to make sure that the storage QoS is achieved? And that's what this talk is about. In this talk, I'll be talking about storage resource pools as an abstraction to provide better isolation and quality of service to storage for virtual machines. My name is Ajay Gulati, and this work is done in collaboration with Ganesha Shanmugnathan from VMware, Shuchen Zhang from Wayne State University, who was an intern with us last year, and Peter Warman from Rice University, who also was a scholar in residence at VMware last year. So let's look at the problem once again. Just to recap, here we are running a bunch of virtual machines, all running on the single shared storage LAN, which is very typical of virtual environments, because shared storage gives us a lot of options, and it is required for a lot of other features that we have, like vMotion, HA, and other things. Now, in this case, there are critical VMs, Online Store and Microsoft Exchange, and then there could be a low priority VM which is running. And on a regular day, things may be fine, but nothing really stops the low-priority VM from sending so many IOs to the data store and then impacting the workload or the performance of application in other VMs. Whereas what you may want to see in this case, that whenever there is contention, the critical workloads are actually protected. Now, this is something that we looked at, and there are some existing solutions to this problem. So let's start with what's existing and what's still lacking. So in existing solutions, you can specify some per VM quality of service in terms of weights for the VM. But it turns out that in many cases, a lot of virtual machines, they work together to create a single application. And they are actually providing the services to the user as a single application, and the requirements may not be known for each VM, or the workload may be different at intensity on different VMs at different times. So if there are four VMs working together, one of them could be hot during the day. In the evening, some other VM could be actually servicing a lot of workload, and it may change over time. So in some cases, the sum of per VM requirement, if you had to actually provision every VM up to its max, may be larger than actually taking the cumulative sum at any point in time. So you would like to actually set the requirement at the group level instead of just setting at every VM level, because again, you would have to over-provision in that case. Secondly, the view on the left-hand side is just the virtual view. That is what the customer sees. But in reality, these VMs could be running on different hosts altogether. So even if the storage is shared, the VMs could be running across a set of hosts. And we need to make sure that when the demand goes up for some VM, we try to give more resources to that host and then to that VM. And if the demand goes up for some other VM, we try to allocate more resources to that host and that VM. So to summarize, the challenges that we are trying to solve here is that we would like to be able to set per VM values, but also allow users to set values at a group level. Second, we would also like to exploit this statistical multiplexing that may happen between the VMs that are working together to provide a solution. And third, we want a decentralized solution in this case, because we cannot funnel all the VM IOs through a centralized scheduler. So any resource management problem comes with actually a resource allocation model. And let's do a brief recap of what are the existing resource allocation models that we have. In this case, I'm just taking a very simple example. There are three clients I'm assuming, And each column in this table represents one sort of resource allocation model. So let's start with the first column, which is weights. A very well-known technique, you can assign basically a weight to every client, and the allocation is done in proportion to the weights. So whatever service you are getting, it would be allocated in proportion to the weights, and what is allocated could be IOPS, it could be time slicing based on the weights, or some other resource that you may pick, for example, bandwidth. Second column represents another control that people have looked at, which is latency, where you can assign some latency control for every client, and the resource allocation scheme would try to meet that model. Third, people have looked at a combination of various things, for example, a weight with a latency deadline and with some amount of burst that the system can absorb. So you can specify three parameters for every workload in this case. And finally, some of the things that we have looked at recently is trying to have this notion of weight with a reservation and a limit, where reservation is a lower bound that we guarantee and limit is an upper bound that we enforce. And these things are already existing, and there are already known solutions to this. Now the question is, what are we providing as a new abstraction which we think can help the customer problem in case of virtual machines? And if you notice the last row here, the weights RNL, we had a solution 2 years ago called MClock, but that only works on a single host. So it's not a distributed solution that helps with the problem. So before going into the talk, let's look at what sort of resource allocation model we provide. So the new abstraction that we are proposing here is storage resource pools, which is basically a way to aggregate as well as isolate IO resources. And here is a very simple example that I'm showing of storage resource pools. So the customer organization, essentially, they create a resource pool where it starts at the org. And if you have different departments, you can create nodes for different departments there. And then there are VMs running within each department. You can put VMs there. And at the leaf, there are potentially VMDKs or virtual disks. We just call virtual disks as VMDKs throughout the talk. Now, once you have created this organization for yourself, you also want to be able to set some controls throughout the tree. So let's briefly look at what sort of controls we allow the user to set. So the first control that we allow user to set is reservation. Reservation essentially says what's the minimum IOPS that we would definitely provide at that level in the resource pool tree. And if you note here, it's possible to set a very high reservation at the pool, but you can set pretty much smaller or zero reservation at the children. For example, if you look at the children of the root here, their reservation adds up to only 600, but the root has a reservation of 1,000 IOPS. So the remaining 400, we would divide between the children based on the demand of the children. Whichever children requires more resources, we would actually allocate more resources to that child. And similarly, if you look at the blue node here, which is marketing, you can see that the customer has said, all of my marketing VMs, they need a reservation of 100, and the VM level values, I'm not even going to bother setting because I don't want to set a value there. I want you to make sure that whichever VM has higher demand is able to get higher IOPS. And we would take that value 100 and divide it between the VMs, and we'll put a higher value for the VM with more demand and lower value for the VM with less demand. So the distribution could be 80-20 at some time, and it could become 30-70 at some other point of time. The second control that we allow the user to set is a limit. This is a very nice control to have because a lot of people complain about that sometimes when they buy new hardware, initially they get very good performance, but as they put more and more VMs on it, the performance actually goes down because of more contention. And limit essentially allows the admin to set the expectation right. So if somebody is asking for 1,000 IOPS, they can actually put a limit of 1,000 IOPS so that they would only see up to 1,000 throughout the lifetime if they want to. And again here, the same concept applies. You can set a limit at a pool level, and you don't have to set limit on the children. And that's the job of virtualization layer to make sure that we take the limit at the parent and enforce that the sum of children IOPS is bounded by that limit. And again, the way we do that is based on the demand. We basically try to make sure that if you have a limit of 1,000 IOPS at the parent, and if the demand of one child is higher, we would set a higher limit on that child and the lower limit on the other one. So in this particular case, if you again look at the marketing node where we have set a limit of 1,000, you can notice that the user has not set any limits on the virtual machines under that marketing node. But we would try to make sure that these VMs won't get more than 1,000. Now, user could have done something like this by setting 500 on two VMs at the same time. But in that case, he would never get he would never be able to give 800 to a VM. Whereas in our case, we can divide that 1,000 as 800 and 200 or 500 and 500. And that's the flexibility that we have, and that's the burden that we take over for the user. The third control that we provide is shares, which is basically weights. It's just that in our terminology, we call them shares. And shares has no units. That's just a relative number that you can set between siblings in the tree. And essentially, what shares mean is that you need to take the parent value and divide it in proportion to the shares which are set on the sibling. And the division of shares is fairly straightforward. It's not a function of demand. Just to give you an example here, if you notice, the shares are set in very different denomination. The root has 1,000, the next level has 40 and 10, and the next level has, again, 160, 80, 80, 600. But the way we would actually try to make sure that VMs are competing well with each other, we actually flatten out the shares when we do the divvy. So in this case, what would happen is you would start at 1,000 at the root. Then based on 40 and 10, it would become 800 and 200 for those two nodes. It's 4:1 ratio. And then similarly, 800 would go in the ratio of 160, 80, 80, which is 2:1:1, and it would become 400, 200, 200. And once we have done the flattening out, you can see that you might have set shares in different denominations at different levels, but the VMs at the bottom would actually be comparable once they are running on the host. And these are the flattened values that we would use. So now we have looked at all the three controls that we have. And essentially, this is the customer view of the world, or what we call as the virtual view of the world. This is what a customer can set, and then he can modify values as and when he pleases. It turns out that in practice, trying to give that abstraction is not very simple. And the reason it's not easy to provide this kind of abstraction is because all these VMs are actually not running on a single host. In reality, the VMs would get mapped to different hosts. They might even vMotion from one host to another, or what vMotion is our term for live migration. So they might even vMotion from one host to another, and the VM DKs could even be placed on different data stores. And we have to basically provide the semantics that I just described in this environment. So just to do a brief recap of what are some of the things we need to solve to provide the abstraction that I just mentioned, we basically need to make sure if the parent reservation at any level in the tree is more than the sum of children reservation, we need to distribute that value among the children VMs. If the parent limit is smaller than the sum of children limit, again, we need to make sure that the limit is set on the children correctly. And finally, we need to distribute parent share among the children. And in order to do all these things, as I mentioned, the current demand of the VM is our main control. And that's what we are trying to make sure that this is something which is very hard for user to figure out, but we can measure demand and we can then flow resources within the tree to make sure that wherever there is high demand, we provide more resources. And since we are doing it based on demand, this whole thing needs to be done periodically. So we would monitor and then we would change, monitor and change. So for the purpose of the talk, we'll basically focus on per data store resource pool tree. So the assumption is there are multiple hosts, but all the virtual disks are on the same data store. If the tree spans multiple devices, it actually can be broken up across devices, and that's something which I'm not covering in the talk, but we can discuss that later. And essentially, the virtual view on a single data store on the left-hand side would look like the physical view on the right-hand side, where the VMs are running on different hosts and the VM DKs are on the same data store. Data store is another term that we use commonly for a single storage device or a LUN that gets exposed or a NFS volume that gets mounted. And we need to provide this abstraction in this distributed setting with multiple hosts. So how do we provide the abstraction? So essentially, we have a two-level scheduling going on. What we do as the first level is we try to compute the total array queue that we can keep pending at the array from all the hosts which are accessing the same data store. Then we split up that queue into per host level queue. So you can think of this as on the total array, we can do, let's say, 100 outstanding IOs. We would split that 100 between host based on the VMs that are running on the host and the settings that you have done for those VMs. Some may have high reservations, some may have low limit. And once we have done that, then on the host locally, we are using mClock as our local scheduler to make sure that the VMs are actually getting their reservation limit and shares satisfied locally on the host. Now, how do we achieve these two things? So there are two main steps that we go over. One is we compute dynamic reservation limit and share setting per VM based on the demand. And second is we basically adjust the host queue itself periodically based on the demand as well as the settings that we have. And in our current prototype, we actually do this every 4 seconds. So every 4 seconds, we monitor the stats, and then we figure out what should be the new per host queue depth in a distributed manner. Every host makes this decision independently. And what should be the new dynamic settings for the VMs running on this host. And those settings are set into the local scheduler. And the overall the resource pool tree is known to each host. So the resource pool tree is a small amount of information which every host can keep. But the computation that they do independently. Now, let's go through each of these steps in a little more detail. So in this case, I'm showing the DV operation of taking the parent value and then dividing it throughout the tree only for the reservation. But a similar computation is done for the limit, shares, and those details and the exact DV algorithm is in the paper. So essentially, we start with the reservation of 100 in this case at the root level. And you can see that at the children, the reservation is 30 and 25 IOPS. Now, it's a very simple example that I'm going for the sake of illustration. And the shares are set in ratio 2:1. So the way the semantics goes, we would like to divide that 100 in ratio 2:1 while meeting the reservation values. And in this case, the limits are not set. So if you do this, it turns out that we can actually set the values to be 66 and 33. And the reason it can be 66 and 33 because I'm assuming that the demand is there on both children. If one of the children had a lower demand, for example, the 66 resource pool had a demand of 50, we would actually have given 50-50. So we use demand as sort of an upper bound when we do this allocation. So in this case, assuming enough demand from both the children, we would get 66 and 33. Now, let's go one more level. And in this case, I have set for the yellow node on the left-hand side a high reservation of 30. And the sibling node has reservation of 0, but 4 times the amount of shares. So in this case, if we actually take 66, which is the value on the parent, and divide it in ratio 1:4, it actually won't work because the reservation would get violated. So in this case, we would actually give 30 to the yellow node, and the distribution would look something like this. It would be 30, 13, 36, and 20. And you don't have to worry about all the math in this, but the main idea is that we would actually take the value, divide it up while respecting the shares value and while considering the demand. In this case, I just assumed that there is enough demand. But if there is low demand, we would actually set a lower value. And similar calculation is actually done for the limits also. And the shares, I already explained, that's actually a relatively straightforward calculation. And once we have computed the numbers at the base level, we would actually set these values in the local scheduler for the next period of 4 seconds. So essentially, the values would change every 4 seconds locally. And if you can see in the diagram, these 4 VMs are running on 2 hosts. So the settings would be done on 2 hosts independently for 2 VMs each. Now, once we have done per VM settings, we need to do the host level queue depth setting. And the way we need to do that is we need to compute the current array capacity, where in terms of total queue depth. And once we have computed that value, we need to allocate that to the host based on the VMs that are running there. So queue depth is sort of our key control in making sure that the host with running VMs with more requirement and demand gets more resources from the array. And finally, as I mentioned before, per VM allocation is handled by the local scheduler. So let's look at how we compute the total queue depth to begin with. Here we are essentially using a modified version of one of the equations that we had in our previous work, Purda. And the equation looks more complicated, but it's fairly straightforward. What it essentially says is there is calligraphic L that represents a congestion threshold, and that's our operating point for the storage device. We would like to operate the data store within that latency value. And LT is basically the overall average latency across all hosts that we are currently monitoring. And if the threshold is higher than the current observed latency, then we would actually increase the queue depth. If the threshold is smaller than the current latency, we would actually decrease the queue depth. So the equation ensures that your overall queue depth is such that the latency is bounded by the congestion threshold. Now, once we have computed that value, we need to essentially partition it between the host. And here is another simple example that I am showing where the VM shares on one host is twice the amount of VM shares on the other host. And I'm taking reservation and to be zero, limit to be max as default values to make the example simple. So in this case, let's say we do our math based on the currently running workload, and the queue depth that we come out with is 48. Now we take 48 and we would actually divide it in ratio 2:1 based on the VMs running on each host, and the number would be 32 and 16. And this example is rather simple, but if I had put a high reservation on one of the VMs on the host on the right-hand side, the value could have been higher than 16. And that is all something that we would compute and set. Now, let's briefly look at some of the storage-specific issues that we have to deal with. The first main question is, how do we set the reservation value at the root itself? And for disk-based devices, we try to use the random I/O performance as the upper bound, because it turns out that in most virtualization workloads, the workload seen by the array is random I/Os because of this blending of I/Os from a large number of VMs. For SSD-based devices, actually, it gets easier because the overall performance of SSDs is so much higher, and one can use part of that performance as an upper bound for the reservation that one can allow at the root. In terms of handling of I/O sizes, we try to specify the bounds for up to a certain I/O size, which based on our experiments is 32 KB. And if you're trying to do larger size I/Os, then we would basically count that as multiple I/Os in a nonlinear manner. And that is something we have talked about in the paper, but I'm not discussing in detail here. And looking at sequential and random workload, again, sequential is something that we optimize for in the local scheduler, and the arrays also optimize for. But typically what we have seen is that most of the virtual workloads are random because of a lot of array-level optimizations, as well as this blending of I/Os from hundreds of virtual disks onto the same storage. So let's look at some of the experimental results now. So we built a prototype of this in ESX hypervisor. There is a user space module that does all the math that I talked about. And then there are a few kernel changes that allows us to set the values in the scheduler periodically. And in our experiments, we use multiple ESX hosts. And there are two experiments that I'm going to be discussing here. In one, we use Windows 2003 VMs running IOMeter with different workload profiles. And in the second one, we are using a bunch of VMs running different enterprise workloads like web server, mail, OLTP, or DVD store. So let's first look at the basic setup of the experiment. In this case, we have one root, and there are three resource pools. And if you note here, each resource pool is running two VMs, and they are actually on separate hosts. The VMs are not on the same host for any resource pool. And what we have done here is we have set a high reservation only at the resource pool level for RP1, and we have set high shares on RP2. So if you look at the performance for this particular resource pool configuration, we notice that the two VMs that are in the resource pool of 1500 reservation, they actually get 750 each in terms of their IOPS. And the remaining capacity is given to the four remaining VMs in ratio 2:1 because their parent had shares in ratio 2:1. Just to go back, the RP2 has shares of 2 and RP3 has shares of 1. Now, at time equal to 1,000 seconds, we actually change the resource pool setting from a reservation of 1,500 to a limit of 500. And you can see as soon as we change the setting, the total performance of the VMs under that pool actually came down to 250 each, and now they're capped at 500. And the performance of the other four VMs improved, again in the ratio as we expect. So this basically shows that even though your VMs could be running across different hosts, we make sure that these controls are enforced on the sum of VM IOPS, not just on a per VM level. I also talked about demand-based allocation. And this is where the actual strength of pooling comes in, or resource pool comes in. This is a similar resource pool tree. What we did essentially is we make the VMs idle at different times. So at 250 second, time equal to 250 second, we make VM1 idle. So if you look at the graph between 250 and 500, when the green VM became idle, you can imagine the spare capacity could have been given to all the five VMs, which is a typical thing a fair scheduler would do. But in our case, all the spare capacity was given to one VM, which was the sibling of that VM. So in this case, the red VM, which is the sibling in the same tree, got to 1,500, whereas other VM did not see any benefit. And that's the benefit of the pooling, that you have created a pool where if one child in the pool gets idle, the other children are able to use that before the resources flow to some other resource pool. And the similar thing happens as you go and make other VMs idle. In the second experiment, we basically had four resource pool trees, and each of them is created based on the application. And the web server tree is running three web server VMs, the mail tree is running two mail VMs, OLTP is running two OLTP VMs, and finally a DVD store tree with one VM running DVD store, which is an e-commerce benchmark. And again, we have set some values at the pool level and not at the VM level. And the way we have set values is to prioritize some workload over other workloads. So in this case, if you look at the result, we ran the configuration with and without storage resource pools. So the pink bar here, they show when we ran with storage resource pool controls, and the yellow bar when we ran without them. And essentially what we see on the left-hand side, which is the throughput plot for all the applications, the places where we have set better controls for the resource pool, those VMs, they get better performance as compared to when the controls are not enforced. And similarly, the latency on the right-hand side is smaller for those workloads when the controls are set as compared to when they are not set. So to summarize, we think storage resource pools provides a powerful abstraction to the user. There are many ways you can configure the system now to actually get the desired behavior that you want. And they're able to provide the isolation between pools, but then very good sharing within a pool. And SRP enforces these controls across hosts in a distributed manner. And as part of future work, we are looking at a few more enhancements. One, we are trying to see if we can automatically set these RLS values based on some other user-level input in case the user doesn't even want to set these values, and see how we can actually bring latency as one of the input controls and use that to set some of these values. Second, we are trying to do some more testing on the new upcoming SSD-based and multi-tiered storage devices, where we actually think it should perform even better because the overall IOPS that you are trying to divide is much higher. And with that, I would be happy to take any questions. Thank you.